The afternoon is blistery hot, and the red bugs and flies are having a field day on my bare ankles and arms. But the heat of the day and the radiant heat from the metal of my pedal car aren't noticed at all. That's because I am 3 years old, and I have yet to understand that you're supposed to spend parts of each day commenting and whining about bugs and heat and humidity. My mind is too clear, too uncluttered, to worry about such stuff. What my mind is filled with is the sight of the sidewalk that runs from the front steps of our small, asbestos-shingled home to the asphalt pavement in front of it. My pedal car is aimed toward the avenue, but my gaze is to the right, toward 15th Street East, and across it to the large, high-fenced federal medical and housing complex known as Northington Campus. That's where Daddy works all day, maintaining the buildings, and sometimes talking with the German prisoners of war who live there. I'm waiting for Daddy to limp home from work, just 100 yards from here, but oh, so far away, since I am not allowed to leave the front yard, and even if I could, 100-yard trek would feel like crossing a damp Sahara. The pedal car squeaks as I work it back and forth on the sidewalk, and the rusty steering wheel is hard to turn. No power steering invented yet. My attention span snaps for a moment, and I look across the avenue at the field where my neighborhood playmates and I will be playing as we get older. The golden grass is nearly 3 feet tall, and it waves so gracefully in the occasional breeze. A biplane buzzes overhead, and I automatically salute it, a ritual drummed up by the sister of mine, Barbara, and me. The patriotic thing to do right now during World War II, while my uncles are overseas fighting, is to recognize the importance of aircraft, using them as a reminder to have fun, but not so much fun as to forget about all those soldiers and sailors and paratroopers and marines and WACs and WAVs and WAFs and Air Corps people and Coast Guarders who might die at any moment, so that I can be safely riding my rusty pedal car each afternoon. Somewhere over yonder, my Uncle Buddy McGee is fighting his way toward Germany. My Uncle Pat McGee is repairing some GI's wound, and the husbands and sons of our neighbors are each doing something to help the war end sooner than never. A black Model A Ford automobile, as rusty and hard to steer as my pedal car, turns off 15th Street onto Eastwood Avenue, my avenue, and pulls up to the house next door. Paw Burns gets out of the car and stoops under his enormous tree to pick up a couple of pecans, which he cracks open with one hand, something I won't be able to do for a few more years. Pawpaw regards me while he picks the sweet meat from the bitter shells. "What you doing, Master Jim?" I blush, not expecting to be spoken to. "Nothing," I reply, and I vigorously pedal the car to show Pawpaw how robust and strong I am, deserving to be called Master. "Well, maybe you'll be doing something later," he jokes, adding, "It's never too late, you know." Pawpaw knows more about me than even my own family. I can tell that, because he's very old, and very old people are wiser than 3-year-old people and grown-up parents. I am embarrassed that he can read my mind, but I am awed by his taking notice of me. I will regret many times not being old enough to sit down with Pawpaw and hear his tales and feel his wisdom, and I will often try to make amends for that loss by spending time with people older than me. It's never too late. Pawpaw leisurely picks up a few more pecans and goes inside his home to see what Mama is up to. I look up the avenue again to see if Daddy has appeared yet. I really am looking up the avenue, not down, because it slants upward toward the street. I will use this one-block incline to my advantage as I grow. It will be great for coasting in a wagon. It will assist me when, one day, on a windy day, I don roller skates, grab Mother's old umbrella, and let the wind fill that umbrella and push me downhill for a block that feels like a mile. Clunk! Goes the manhole cover on the street before our house. It makes that sound every time a car rolls over it, and I will hear that sound mixed with the lonely, mellow sound of a train whistle throughout many days and nights on Eastwood Avenue. Even now, in my book loft, 55 miles and 60 years away from Eastwood Avenue, I still hear that train whistle each day. It may even be the same train whistle, because the engine seemed to be rolling on. It is the same railroad track. I do know that. I have no way of knowing that in half a century I will be living and working by the same tracks that run by Eastwood, having the same lonesome going-away feeling in my belly that I have now sitting here in this rusty pedal car. I gaze at that field again, anxious to go hiding and adventuring among the golden weeds. My brand-new baby brother, Ronnie, is abed inside the house, dreaming of warm milk and warm breasts. My older sister, Barbara, is swirling crayons in her Shirley Temple coloring book, her artistic skills even now pushing themselves into full view. Barbara's coloring is full of shadings and interpretations that kids like me can never achieve. It's no fun for me coloring within the lines, but Sister Barbara does it so well. I just know she's going to be a famous artist like my Aunt Mattie Wooten in West Blocton. I look at my small palms and marvel at the red dust and sweat that have made themselves into clay in the folds and wrinkles and under the fingernails. I wipe them on my short pants so that Barbara or Mother won't make me wash them. Up the street, I see the figure of Daddy, and I scramble out of the pedal car because it can't go as fast as I can. My father limps from an old coal mining accident. He wears khaki pants and a pith helmet, just like Jungle Jim does in the movie serials. I race up the street and hug his leg, and maybe this is the day he brings me a handmade gift from one of the young German soldiers. It's a beautiful curved bottle with a painted figure thereon, and we will keep this small treasure in the family from now on, never knowing the name of the prisoner artist, but knowing that it is a special and unearned gift from a stranger in a strange land to a family he will never meet. Daddy smells familiar and manly, as daddies usually do. A bit of coal dust from the summer dormant furnaces at Northington settles down and shakes its essence up whenever Daddy and his workers move about. Some sweat, no air conditioning in the hospital or in the barracks. Some hair tonic fragrance, but mainly the smell of Daddy. He picks me up high, and my cheek rubs against his swarthy, unshaved cheek, and I will forever remember that texture because there's never been another experience like that. I don't rub cheeks with adult men, so my encounter with Daddy's face is a fresh and uncluttered encounter. Mother actually starches and presses Daddy's khaki trousers so that he starts each day fresh and tailored. Daddy walks down the avenue with a small 3-year-old dancing around him, and we go inside our cave, smelling cornbread cooking in a greased iron pan, turnip greens bubbling in their sliced egg broth, and freshly fried chicken, waiting for kids to fight over drumsticks and pulley bone wishes. The rock is rolled before the entrance of the cave to keep the saber-toothed tigers at bay, and our little Stone Age family huddles together to await the fireflies, the purple-starred night, and the likes of Fibber McGee and Molly, crouching inside our radio set in the living room, getting ready to entertain us before we leap, fresh toothbrushed, into our hand-washed bedclothes to sleep the only innocent and pure sleeps of our long lives. Can I, the grizzled old memory man, return to those days and wrap myself up in their warm purity and once more feel wanted and loved and cared for and safe? As Pawpaw Burns would say, still regarding me closely after all this time, it's never too late.